Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Let us be lovers, we'll marry our fortunes together.
Americans cherish their national myths, some of which predate the country's founding, but the time for illusions, nostalgia, and grand ambitions abroad has gone by, according to journalist Patrick Smith in his new book, Time No Longer. He says Americans are now faced with a choice between the mythical idea of themselves, their nation, and their global mission on one hand, and on the other, the idea of America that is rooted in historical consciousness. Patrick Smith was the International Herald Tribune's bureau chief in Hong Kong and then Tokyo from 1985 to 1992. He also wrote Letter from Tokyo for The New Yorker. He is the author of four previous books and contributes frequently to The New York Times, Business Week, Time, and other publications. It's always a thrill to have him on the program. Patrick, thank you very much for making the trek. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, Joe. A pleasure to be back.
It is. It's a delight to have you here and to talk about the new book. Let us there's nothing simple about this, but in four essays you talk about our relationship with history that you define both as unusual and, quite frankly, a bit dysfunctional.
Yes. I don't think Americans can be singled out in this regard, but America happens to be my subject.
Yeah.
I wanted to write about America for a long time. And as I formed the ideas that went into these essays, I explained this in the introduction. Everything moved around because time went on. But the one thing that would simply not fall off the table was our very peculiar and, as you say, dysfunctional, I'm not afraid of the word, relationship with our own history, right? Yeah, I think it's rather vital.
So in the essays, the Spanish-American War and the roots of American imperial ambition, the Cold War years and the effects of fear and power on the American psyche, and the uneasy years from 9/11 to the present, and what I got out of it anyway is that yes, there were some changes, there were some shifts, but we also don't seem to learn lessons very well, do we?
Well, you said it, Joe. I didn't.
I don't know if that was an intentional theme of the book, but that's certainly what I got out of it.
We don't. I don't think. Again, one must be careful not to single out Americans as some sort of exceptional case, right?
Right.
Important word. But we don't, and I think the reason for that is, again, it goes back to the way we conceive of and, if you will, ingest and live with our history, okay? It's not, in too many cases, an authentic version of events, okay? History changes from generation to generation. Every generation writes its own history, as it should, okay? But ours, we tend to fix in granite, and it becomes, as I call it, a mythological substitute for an organic history, a living history. And therefore, we have no, to repeat the word, we have no organic relationship with it, you know. So that I think prevents us, to return to your original question, from learning from our past. You know, we are having trouble now learning from the past of Afghanistan and Iraq as we look upon Syria. It's not very far back.
No, and one of the things that I think is important to introduce into this conversation, as you introduce in the book, which is when we say history, we're also talking about myth. We're also talking about history that may not really be the history. It's what we were taught. It's what we were told. It's what we believe, but it may not be what actually happened.
Well, yes, and I think, I mean, as I said, I think in the first few pages, every people have all people have myths, right?
Sure.
There's nothing wrong with that, right? But
no, we have them in our families. We have them in our
And numerous peoples have confused those myths with history. Okay, we're not the first. We didn't invent the mistake, but we are I happen to be writing about my own country, and we are suffering this mistake now. And my argument is very simple: unless we reconnect with our own past, our own history, we are not going to be able to go forward in a century that demands that we do go forward rather speedily. I mean, it's not an accident that I spent numerous years outside this country, as your little bio indicated. You go outside of this country, you realize how fast the world is spinning, and we're simply not keeping up.
So how do we embrace a new perspective and a new self-image that, as you point out, is so essential if the U.S. is going to find its place?
Right. Well, obviously, it's a large project, okay, and many are they who would argue it's simply impossible. That's in there as a potential outcome. Yes, it might prove impossible, but I think we can begin by looking at ourselves more clearly and honestly. My topic was the American century. I think there's plenty in it that begs for revision. And once we understand how we behaved, notably in the second half of the 20th century, we will begin to develop a better understanding of where we stand in the 21st.
I realize that a lot of this is reactionary, and I just think, I mean, we were talking about this earlier in the program, but you have a decision that came out earlier this week from the Supreme Court in the Voting Rights Act. And we look at something that is, you know, has overturned something that was 50 years old that is, you know, fundamental to what we thought of as an improvement.
Yeah.
And now it seems like we're taking a step back.
I heard that decision and I thought it's just grotesque forgetfulness. How can we do that? You know, but, you know, some years back in another area altogether, we took back Glass-Steagall, you know.
Yes.
Glass-Steagall was put there for quite particular reasons. And we forgot about those reasons, took it back, and then we created another banking crisis of the same sort that prompted Glass-Steagall in the first place. So we're constantly forgetting.
I mean, I understand changing and I understand evolving. I mean, we saw that in the decision yesterday for DOMA. Yeah. Okay, that's good. You know okay, now we've evolved and that's good. But yet there are these things that, you know, we go back to other times, and you wonder, you know, are we ready to make that next step? And
well, I couldn't be more fortunate in the timing of this book, because so much of what is in front of us goes straight to the thematics of this piece of work, and I didn't plan it that way, but it just seems to land squarely in the middle as a kind of defining framework, so to speak, for an enormous amount of what's going on around us. I mean, the DOMA decision was, of course, very welcome. You know, we didn't get a founding fathers argument for once, you know?
Right.
But in other ways, we one has to value the past, but be free of it. You know, it's both at once, right? You have to recreate yourself every generation.
The book is fascinating. It is entitled "Time No Longer: Americans After the American Century." Americans After the American Century. It's by Patrick Smith, and it's published by Yale University Press. Patrick, a great pleasure to have you join us and to share your expertise. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks very much. Great.
Thank
great
you very much. Here. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.